Prosecutors, City of Bloomington officials, and defense attorneys have stayed mostly quiet in public about the Coliseum fraud case in the 500 days since the indictments were unsealed. That changed this week after the release of a grand jury transcript showing how prosecutors made the case step by step for indictment. We first reported on those grand jury proceedings on WGLT.org. Today, we're hearing for the first time from the defense attorney for lead defendant John Butler. GLT's Ryan Denham is in studio to set this up for you. Hey, Ryan.
Hey there, Charlie.
Why was this grand jury transcript significant?
Well, this is kind of the first time we've had the whole case spelled out for us step by step in public view. Before now, all we had were kind of the original bills of indictment that were unsealed 16 months ago, but they were like pretty vague. They were filled with references that you couldn't really make out what they were, like the quote-unquote Kelly discounts and extraordinary expenses, all these things you didn't really know what they meant. And so this transcript is from 5 days before those indictments were unsealed. It's a prosecutor asking the lead state police investigator to kind of go step by step through these seven different, like, mini alleged schemes that added up to like $750,000. So we're able to kind of connect the dots between the actual charges and dollar amounts. So you can even do like a pie chart that shows like what the biggest chunk of alleged theft was. And then at the end of it, you've got like grand jurors asking questions of the investigator and the prosecutor. So you can kind of get a sense of what they're confused about. And, you know, should this ever go to trial, that may kind of get some insight as to what, you know, jurors at that trial might be asking about.
How did it get released?
It was filed with a motion to dismiss in a related Coliseum case. So Kelly Klein is one of the Coliseum defendants. She worked underneath John Butler. And so Kelly Klein's attorney is filing motions to dismiss the charges against her, arguing that they're too vague and that the prosecutors used like opinion evidence to convince this grand jury to indict. And as part of that motion to dismiss, he submits as an exhibit this 58 pages of grand jury proceedings that we've never seen before.
And what's the response been?
Well, I spoke this week with Steve Beckett. He is the attorney for John Butler. Again, he is the lead defendant in the Coliseum case. So Steve Beckett is an attorney based out of Champaign-Urbana, and he told me that this is not something he wanted to do. He didn't want to go public necessarily and start defending his client on the radio or in newspapers, as he put it. But he felt compelled to respond after this grand jury transcript came out. He's given us no comments in the past as we've called him to react to different things. And this is the first time he said, you know what? Yep, I'll comment.
He's also tried to have the trial moved.
He did. I believe that was an unsuccessful attempt to move it out of McLean County, citing pretrial publicity concerns.
Does this renew those concerns?
I don't know. That's a great question. We'll see if he tries to get that to come back to the surface.
In the meantime, here is your conversation with him.
You know, I want to try this case in court. I don't want to try this case in newspapers or on the radio. But when the grand jury transcript got released and became public like that, you have to consider that the grand jury, you know, it isn't like I'm saying that that Agent Rossiter, you know, is lying, you know, quote, lying, things like that. It is I'm commenting upon his view of his own investigation, and it's an unfiltered view. There was nobody cross-examining him. There was nobody presenting these opposite points, as you're allowing me to do today. And the ethics law for lawyers in Illinois only allow me to comment on these things that you've asked me about because of this public release that wasn't, you know, that's not something that John Butler or I generated.
The state police investigator who's on this grand jury transcript, testified that the city had had no access to the Coliseum Fund, this main fund used for like building operations. The city had sought access but was denied that access. So, what is your response to that?
My response is that the contract provided that the city had access, and all they had to do was come to the Coliseum to look at records, financial records. And that the issue, the true issue here was sort of the problem that you have where you have a public-private partnership. So the SIAM, the company, of course, had contracts with X and, you know, that they booked and with promoters. And those contracts provided that financial information had to be kept confidential, and so it would be a breach of the contract. So, for example, no entertainer wants anybody to know how much they got paid for in Bloomington when they're trying to negotiate with Champaign, Peoria, Springfield, you know, whatever. And so that's why they have those provisions. So to be able to get a good act to come to Bloomington and play in the Coliseum, you have to, you know, agree to those terms. So if the financial records were readily accessible to the city, for example, by internet, like we all get to see our bank records now, then they become public records. And they obviously also are FOIA-able, and we ended up, there was a big dispute. I really don't want to go into that about the FOIA regarding this, but you sort of see the problem between the public-private. In fact, I know that there were a couple of occasions that city officials or employees did come over to the Coliseum and look at financial records, but they were always there, and the contract had a provision that said the city could do that. So how they had access and whether or not it was immediate access obviously was a dispute. The city had their mind about the way they wanted things done, and obviously Siam had their mind the way they wanted things done. And it was done that way, you know, for 10 years. And so it's only after the fact that, and at the end of the contract when disputes arose, that all of a sudden the city is complaining, saying they never had access to financial information. And that's just not accurate.
Well, I get what you're saying about sort of the needs of a private company, especially one who's kind of working in entertainment and has contracts like this. But a private business inside a public building, isn't there an argument for some sort of increased need for transparency, even if it's a private business, because you've been hired in a public entity?
I think it's a good argument, and I think that the law on this has changed. I think at the time that the folks first went into the contract, The private aspect of this information would have truly been considered private in the law. But there have been some cases decided over the last several years that sort of change our thinking about this, that if a private company is doing a city, you know, or a governmental function, that makes the information about that private entry susceptible to purview and review. And so it would be more difficult now, I think. And so we have the benefit of hindsight, and so I certainly understand your question. But certainly at the time these folks began this relationship, private was private and public was public.
Your client, John Butler, and his staff are accused of using an accounting method on discounted items like combo meals to lower the amount of money paid to the city in commissions. They're also accused of not paying the city its full commission on so-called third-party sales, which are like an Avanti's or a Papa John's that's selling food inside the Coliseum. So what's your response to those kind of two branches of the accusations here?
All right. So let's take the third-party contracts. So the third-party contracts are negotiated, and they pay an upfront licensing fee. So, for example, a particular vendor might pay $20,000 to be able to sell their product. And that money, that licensing fee, goes to the city of Bloomington. Siam receives a commission from making that licensing sale. It's no different than selling advertising. And then their product comes in and it's being sold. So if there's also a commission on the individual, for example, slice of pizza, if you do the financial analysis, then Siam or BMI, which is actually the counterpart that's actually doing the food concessions, actually would be losing money on each slice of pizza. It just makes no sense. And so the way Siam interpreted the contract, and there's a provision in there for sort of, quote, discounted food sale items, which Siam said that's what this was. This, in essence, is equivalent to the discounted food sale items. And so way back in 2007 or 8, I remember seeing a document about how this was going to be handled, and it was handled that way for 10 years. And so, like I say, again, at the end of the contract, now people are looking back at it and saying, and it's a dispute that arose in the last couple of years of operation. But Siam had its interpretation of the contract, and the city had its interpretation of the contract. Which one is right? Well, there's a dispute. We call that a contract dispute. And the contract provided for conciliation, mediation, arbitration to try to resolve that dispute. It's a question about an amount of money. It's stuff like that that happens in business all the time. Can we reach an agreement and resolve this dispute? Well, that opportunity was never presented itself. Instead, the city went to state police. The state police decided that this was criminal, and we end up with an indictment.
Now, did John ever ask the city or tell the city at some point during that 10 years, like, okay, this is the way I'm interpreting the contract as it relates to discounted items and third-party sales?
Yes, this is not a surprise.
This is GLT Sound Ideas. I'm Ryan Denham. I'm speaking with Steve Beckett, the defense attorney for John Butler, lead defendant in the Coliseum fraud case. Beckett is responding to the allegations disclosed in a newly released grand jury proceedings transcript. That grand jury proceeding led to Butler's indictment. Steve, the state police investigator told the grand jury about how what John Butler and his staff were doing was counter to, quote, industry standards. So what do you think of that, citing not just the law but these industry standards to make a case for indictment?
Well, first of all, I don't think that there is a, quote, industry standard that applies in all situations. It depends on the language of the contract. And, you know, that's why I was troubled and had a prior motion in this case, because the grand jury didn't have the contract. The grand jury, how can you ask intelligent questions if you don't have the contract in front of you? And so the real question is, what does the contract say? But, you know, the industry people that I've contacted say that it depends on the language of the contract. There are some situations where commissions would apply to third-party sales, and there are some situations where commissions wouldn't apply, to say that there's one all being industry standard. So the other problem with that is to say that a violation of a so-called industry standard, in somebody's opinion, is a violation of the criminal law. That's kind of a vague way to charge someone with an offense.
And the grand jury transcript also goes into to greater detail on the alleged cash skimming inside the Coliseum's vaults. The state police investigator said around $100,000 in cash was allegedly taken from the vault, costing the city money in unpaid commissions and the state unpaid taxes. So what's your response to that part of the accusations?
That John Butler and Siam did not know there was skimming. This wasn't the city's money that was being skimmed. This was BMI's money. It's like any employer who has employees who are dealing in a cash business, like a bar or a restaurant, where you have to worry about the manager and waitresses and bartenders and whether or not they're putting money in their pocket. You know, this isn't a situation where all of a sudden $100,000 was gone. This is a situation where money was taken over a long period of time, and there's a pattern in practice, and there is an individual who's admitted that he did it.
And, you know, that said, the state police investigator did testify that John Butler authorized at least some of this, specifically $12,000 in Christmas bonuses for three employees. Is that not true?
No, it's not true. First of all, the issue, the $12,000 issue wasn't Christmas bonuses. It was gratuity. And so this gentleman who pled guilty approached John and said, you know, all of the bartenders and waitresses and everybody are getting gratuities, and I've added it up, and we should have gotten, our employees, our management employees, should have got gratuities over this period of time, too, and it amounts to about $12,000. And so John said, well, okay, I understand your logic. That's okay. You can do that. You can pay yourself your gratuities. But John thought it was going to be paid like payroll. In the normal way of payroll, he had no idea there was some sort of cash fund that this guy had accumulated, and he took the money out of cash. He had no idea that money was paid that way.
I also want to ask about this last-minute infusion of cash that John Butler and his former finance chief, Kelly Klein, reportedly asked for in the final weeks of their contract back in spring of 2016. The way the state police describe this, you know, asking for $250,000, and then that money moves into John's account, looks unusual. What's your explanation for that?
One, it's not unusual. From time to time throughout the operation of the Coliseum over a 10-year period, there would be cash flow problems. And Siam would have to approach the city and say, we need money in the Coliseum funds. We have utilities to pay. And obviously, Siam had earned commissions, and so they were entitled to payments for the advertising and the sponsorships and things that they have done over the years. And now the contract is coming to an end. And yeah, if they don't get that money paid by the end of the contract, now they're going to be chasing the city of Bloomington for the commissions that they're entitled to. And so the request for the infusion of cash, one, is something that's happened every year throughout the 10 years and maybe a couple times a year, depending upon the time of year when the cash needs were. And second, it's the end of the contract. Once the contract is coming to an end and the money comes to Siam, then that's Siam's money. And the principal behind Siam is John Butler. And so Siam's money ultimately becomes John Butler's money. So if you just think about it logically, there's really nothing surprising about this.
What's next in the Coliseum case? I saw that John Butler was due back in court this week.
Right. We're in the middle of a motion to suppress, and so we have a hearing in early March to conclude that. Right now, you know, the state police had, you know, a year and a half and investigated this, and they looked at it from their point of view, which is to try to say that there's criminal liability. And obviously, we're looking at it from our point of view, which is there's no criminal liability. And so we've been garnering financial records and communication records, for example, from the city of Bloomington and other sources, putting together information that we expect to present in our defense. And that's a cumbersome, document-heavy process, which is literally hundreds of thousands of pages of documents. And so it has taken some time. There's also been some change in prosecutors, people who have left the office, and people who have sustained, I think, illnesses or injuries, and that's contributed to some of the delays that we've had in court hearings.
Well, do you think this thing is going to go to trial, Steve?
I don't see any reason why it wouldn't. My clients aren't guilty, and so why in the world would they accept responsibility for something they're not guilty of?
That's Steve Beckett, the defense attorney for John Butler, lead defendant in the Coliseum fraud case. Beckett is responding to the allegations disclosed in a newly released grand jury proceedings transcript that led to Butler's indictment. I'm Ryan Denham.
You can read the whole grand jury transcript, all 58 pages of it, at WGLT.org. We'll put it on the homepage.